welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. We want to make sure, I want to get it right this time, because yesterday I just really fumbled it bad. We want to make sure that when we make our appeal to heaven, we try to do so in such a way. As a matter of fact, I think there's, welcome back, Tammy, by the way.
Thank you.
I think there's merit in, because we've mentioned this before, but I think there's merit in talking about sanctifying. I mean, when you receive a blessing, when you receive something, you should sanctify by giving thanks and by offering, you know, it's the humility, right?
Mm-hmm.
That we, you know, should be thankful for what we have. And that's why in the proclamation, we give service. George Washington had the nation give service for being the recipient of the Constitution. And so that's a way of sanctifying, by sacrificing, serving, and so forth. So anyway, when you make your appeal, you may want to consider kind of fortifying it with those types of things. But let's dive into, let's not skip past that final obligatory. Folks, your campaign, I hope you're well underway with your campaign. You need to be in and on hard in doing a PR campaign against your county commissioners, whoever it is that you're seeking to unseat. And as a matter of fact, it all should begin with your county commissioners. We need to take our counties back, period. So with that, we were talking about the establishing of a government. And back in the 1870s, all of these large areas thought, you know what? We could create a state. Let's create a state out of this big square plot of land called Wyoming. Right? And so the qualifications that were required was Wyoming needed to have 60,000 people in it before it could become a state. Now, when you look at what that meant, 60,000 people, and what the cost of government would be to actually be self-sustaining, you go, okay, so apparently, you know, 60,000, that was kind of appropriate for how much government cost, but how much was government doing in those days? What services were they providing? They weren't building freeways. They weren't they weren't buying your medical prescriptions and supporting your doctor. I mean, what was government doing for you back in the 1880s, 1870s?
What were they doing?
Very little. Very little. And they were doing pretty good because they were taxing, you know, the income of the sale of, you know, cows that went to slaughter, or, you know, the crops that went, you know, into the market space. There was a level of taxation, and that helped fund the judiciary. It helped fund the, you know, the sheriff. It helped fund the seats of the governor. And if you actually look at how much these people made, they weren't making these, you know, really obscene, opulent, you know, salaries. And so over time, the people spent a little bit more money on the governor's mansion, a little bit more money here, a little bit more money there. But why not? They can make these improvements. Over time, government started thinking, well, let's start doing things for you. And so building roads, we're going to build roads. Well, a lot of people, I would think, in Wyoming, we don't need no stinking roads. We got, you know, we ride our horses. That's how we get around. You know, I'll bet you there was a real pushback when the Fords were coming to town, right? And so I could just see how, you know, when did Wyoming get its first paved road? That was probably a real hallmark, because it was probably much later than many of the other states, because they had a different lifestyle and a different culture in Wyoming than New York or California, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there was no, you know, mass of people. I mean, I guess if you watched and looked at the population of the census, where the people were, because I think census would give you that picture of, you know, where the more populated parts of the state were. It was still not, you know, really a metropolis. I mean, even today, Cheyenne, well, shoot, today, does not Wyoming pay for its own air company, airfare, right? You guys have a subsidized airline. What is it?
I don't know.
Okay. So, because for most people to fly into Wyoming, technically, most of them fly into Denver or Colorado, and then they get a rental car and drive up. Because I know there's no major airline that lands in Wyoming. I, you know, unlike Montana, unlike probably maybe South Dakota, Utah, and so and Colorado. So do you guys have a primary broadcasting station like ABC, CBS, and NBC coming out of Cheyenne, or do you guys pick up air broadcasting out of Denver and the areas around? See, Wyoming is just kind of like that little area in between everything, right? Or it's a it's
so
actually
I guess
a big
we
area.
We pay for Central Air Service, EAS.
Uh-huh.
There's also SkyWest.
Okay. Okay. And those are either, like I said, they're probably subsidized. But prior to that, right, prior to all of that, I mean, I would think that if you really started looking at the history of when Wyoming was stepping into the 20th century, they were probably... I don't want to say that, you know, they were backwards or anything. Everything worked the way it was, right? Why fix something that ain't broken? You know, there's a lot to that. Why fix things that aren't broken? So anyway, when we were looking at Wyoming, though, we were talking about the revenue that was coming into the state government. And I believe you came up with a number. What was that percentage when it came to revenue?
The percentage, hold on, let me find it again.
I think it was like a little over 50%. In other words...
Yeah, so this was 2022. Approximately 56% of Wyoming state revenue is derived from federal funds.
Federal funds. So in other words, when we look at what that money pays for, and I have these conversations with candidates, like governors and so forth, because... When you look at what the government is paying for, they're paying for you to keep federal lands and operating or to provide services that they want you to do, like healthcare, Medicare, those types of things. So they give you this federal money to, you know, to cover these costs, and they have no constitutional authority to do that. Right. So in other words, they're giving you money to do things that they want you to do, but they have no constitutional authority to do. Now, let's just take one of the sources of money, which is the operations and the maintenance of the national parks in Wyoming, the federal lands. When you look at Wyoming, because we were going to talk about this, and I said, let's talk about this on the air. When you look at the Tetons, when you look at Yellowstone, I mean, those are such beautiful places. Now, there is there's a term, I think it's called Passivhaus, which is, I guess, European, German, or what have you, for building something that is, it seems to be a part of the landscape. In other words, when you create this edifice, like a hotel, if it's a very passive, it would be built into the hillside so that you wouldn't see the structure other than from one direction. In other words, you wouldn't see the skyscraper. you know, just coming out of the air. It would be basically built in, and it would be, it seemed like it would be a part of the environment. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at what could Wyoming make if they actually decided to commercialize Yellowstone and the Tetons? And when I say commercialize, let Hilton come in and build a property and have a resort. Just like they kind of have done with, you know, some of these other places where they create, you know, these, I'll just say tourist traps, whether that be Park City, Utah, it doesn't matter. I mean, right, there's all of these places where they create these resorts, Vail, Beaver Creek, Vail, Colorado, and they bring in a lot of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's got to be some ski places up in the Tetons, right? I mean, the Tetons are a huge mountain range.
Oh, yeah.
And so are they suitable for skiing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so there you go. I mean, so those lands, that's federal dollars that you're getting paid, but you're not making money off of it. In other words, as the federal government has kind of taken these things and they're trying to be conservative, but they're actually being controlling and constrictive because they're not allowing you to actually use your resources to sustain yourself. They're telling you how to use your resources. And I believe that if Utah cut those strings and said, get out of our lives, government, you should not even be doing this to our state and taking our resources from us. This goes back to Madison's notes on nullification, where a state has an inherent right for its self-sustaining, for its self-preservation. There's no doubt in my mind that when you look at all of the energy sources, all of the different sources that are available, I mean, I haven't even talked about Trump. And what really aggravated me on Monday this week was when Trump was doing this radio interview, he basically came right out and said, hey, this has nothing to do with the Constitution. And I'm going, yeah, that's right. Mm. What he's doing is not constitutional. Absolutely. And so, you know, but that's just an indictment. It's almost like as bad as when Nancy Pelosi said, you know, if you want to read it, you pass it, but then you can read it. That's not how business should be done. Anyway, when we look at how much money Wyoming is getting and being so dependent on that money, I'm just saying, wow, you know, Wyoming could actually be a, you know, an independent state. They could truly, because look at all the coal that you're not able to harvest and you can't sell on the market because there's no port that'll allow you to mass sell your coal.
Yeah.
And those ports like Seattle and Portland or LA, they're not allowing this to come through because they're actually violating the Constitution. The Commerce Clause does not allow them to do that. They don't get to choose what you want to ship out their port. If there's basic, they have a right to charge you with reasonable fees, but they're claiming that your charcoal dust is coming off of that stuff. Are you kidding me? Seriously? Anyway, so when we look at what Wyoming is doing and what they're doing with the money that they're getting, they're basically they're caught. They feel like they can't give it up, and they're afraid to, you know, that they can't actually make it on their own. And I believe that there are Wyomingites that actually have courage and they have belief in Wyoming. The problem is your legislature doesn't believe in Wyoming. Or I should say, maybe they're getting paid not to believe in Wyoming, to basically take the money and shut up. Anyway, and to me, that's just a huge travesty. But let's get to the content, because we want to get into the ratification debates. And so the first thing we're going to get into are the amendments to the Articles of Confederation. And as we were saying yesterday, and it was unfortunate that I don't have a gotcha, folks. Other than the Organic Act, there's really no other gotcha. And so if you know of anything that's a source document that we can actually read, then would be happy to, you know, provide you with all of the details of the sordid details of the evil that is bestowed upon our government. But anyway, the First Amendment was written in February 1781 to the Articles of Confederation, February 3rd, as a matter of fact, and it was grant to power collect import duties, and this was on the 3rd of February. Now, remember, the Articles of Confederation, supposedly they had all the powers they needed. Everybody said, well, we don't need more powers. And here they are, they're asking for power, grant of power. So let's go ahead and read this.
Resolve that it be recommended to the several states as indispensably necessary that they vest a power in Congress to levy for the use of the United States the duty of 5% ad valorem at the time and place of importation upon all goods, wares, and merchandises of foreign growth and manufacturers which may be imported into any of the said states from any foreign port, island, or plantation after the first day of May 1781, except arms, ammunition, clothing, and other articles imported on account of the United States or any of them, and except wool cards and cotton cards and wire for making them, and also except salt during the war.
Okay, so they want to make sure that they're not going to tax the stuff that the United States, or I should say, now what were they calling themselves? Do you see that? They actually called themselves the United States. Now, how many people have you heard say that the United States is a part of the corporations?
Well, I mean, many.
Right. Oh, no, that's a term. The United States, that's not on the Constitution. They weren't referring. And actually, under the Articles of Confederation, they were determining, they were calling themselves the United States because that's what they were talking about. They wanted to make sure that any articles that were coming in, such as arms, ammunition, clothing, that were being imported on the account of the United States, in other words, Continental Congress, this union or the general government for the fighting of war, what have you, then it was not to be, there would not be any taxes or imposts on it. Interesting, right?
Yeah, very.
Okay. You know, when people make these assertions because, oh, the term United States, that doesn't exist. They didn't start using that until the corporations and them redoing the Constitution. No, that's not true. The United States was in the Constitution. And as a matter of fact, I believe they referred to citizens as well, because they even said that citizens didn't exist under the Constitution. And so... What happens is when people hear things and it just, I guess the best way to say it is when somebody goes to a presentation and it really makes you feel good, like, wow, this is really good information because it supports, you know, my feeling, you know, like you go and you get fed, you know, that all of the, you know, all these things are all wrong. Now, there are atrocities that are occurring with our government. They're violations of the Constitution. But when they start giving you history that they can't actually support, they can't act, I mean, come on, this is a formal document, United States, or this concept of magistrates and what have you. It makes me wonder, why is it that nobody's doing the due diligence or at least looking at things from a macro view to say, seriously? And, you know, this is how we have so many patriots that are so vulnerable that they're buying into these ideas because, you know, they trust the people that are saying it. They trust the people that are taking them to it. And at any point, is anybody going, hey, have you verified any of this stuff? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Have you read the source documents? Have you done the due diligence? And that right there, as a matter of fact, the words due diligence was used a few times in that British treaty of this 1871 treaty.
Anyway. Well, don't they say that it's all caps?
No. Capital U, capital S. So when you look at the Declaration of Independence, it was a little u, because at that point in, they were united as in the spirit of, but not as a title or an organization. When the Declaration of Independence occurred, or when they wrote that, at that point in time, the governing agreement was the Articles of Association. They weren't a confederation. They were just associated with each other. So they were just united, independent, and sovereign states. Then they formed in 1777, they formed the Articles of Confederation. And it took them, what, 5-6 years to get ratified? Because it wasn't ratified until March 1783. So 6 years it took for the Articles of Confederation to finally be ratified. And by the time it was ratified, the Third Amendment was being presented. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and again, this goes back to, this was a haphazard thing. They, you know, they finally declared, they didn't even create a government first. They declared independence first. It's,
yeah,
it's almost, I, you know what? They were doing the right thing. And I think that they were being blessed. There's no doubt in my mind. They were being blessed. But in today's forum, if you're not doing the right things and you're riding along and you shoot that horse you're riding, because that's what they kind of did. Then you've really put yourself in a sling. So, anyway, let's keep going, though. Also a like duty on the next paragraph. Let's go ahead and finish this.
Hold on, I gotta find my spot.
Next, the second paragraph underneath.
Also, a like duty of 5% on all prizes and prize goods condemned in the court of admiralty of any of these states as lawful prize. Uh-huh. That the monies arising from the said duties be appropriated to the discharge of the principal and interest of the debts already contracted or which may be contracted on the faith of the United States for supporting the present war. That the said duties be continued until the said debts shall be fully and finally discharged.
Okay. So this is literally just asking them, so the ability to raise money. Who at this point in time was making money on all of the imports? Any guesses?
New England?
No, the states. Virginia, New York. As a matter of fact, the states that had the ports were making, they were making the lion's share. Because they were the ones basically putting the impost on them. So now the government came along and said, we want to put an impost on all things that are coming in, except those things that are coming in because we requested it for the United States. All right, so there's the first one done. And so the next one is the amendment to give Congress coercive power over the states and their citizens. Huh. Wow, that's some pretty powerful language, isn't it? Coercive power. Okay. All right. Now, we're going to notice that they use the term United States in Congress, right? See that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Just pointing it out that there's this consistency in the source documents before the U.S. Constitution that the term United States capitals, United States, is there. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Whereas it is stipulated and declared in the 13th article of the Confederation that every state shall abide by the determinations of the United States in Congress assembled on all questions which by this Confederation are submitted to them. That the articles of this Confederation shall be invariably observed by every state by which article the general and implied power is vested in the United States in Congress assembled to enforce.
Well, so unfortunately, so I don't know if Tammy knows, but unfortunately I didn't notice that we were out of time. And so that's okay. This is only halfway through. So we'll be able to pick this back up where she was rudely interrupted because we have a fixed time for this break. If not, we'd never get it. But anyway, we'll be right back, folks, right after this. Thank you.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Oh, open mic. I coughed into an open mic. I'm so sorry, folks. Anyway, I am sorry, Tammy, that I didn't realize we only had a few seconds to going in before the break. So not that that's the first time, and hopefully it will be the last. But anywho, all right, so let's pick it back up from the beginning. Thank you.
Okay, so we're starting all over again?
Yeah, go ahead. Might as well.
Okay, whereas it is stipulated and declared in the 13th Article of the Confederation that every state shall abide by the determinations of the United States in Congress assembled on all questions which by this Confederation are submitted to them, that the Articles of this Confederation shall be inviolably observed by every state, by which article a general and implied power is vested in the United States in Congress assembled to enforce and carry into effect all the articles of the said Confederation against any of the states which shall refuse or neglect to abide by such their determinations, or shall otherwise violate any of the said articles, but no determinate and particular provisions is made for that purpose. Whereas the want of such provision may be made a pretext to call into question the legality of measures which may be necessary for preserving the authority of the Confederation and for doing justice to the states which shall duly fulfill their federal engagements, and it is moreover most consonant to the spirit of a free constitution that on the one hand all exercise of power should be explicitly and precisely warranted, and on the other that the penal consequences of a violation of duty should be clearly promulgated and understood. And whereas it is further declared by the said 13th Article of Confederation that no addition shall be made to the articles thereof unless the same shall be agreed to in a Congress of the United States and be afterwards confirmed by the legislatures of every state. The United States in Congress assembled, having seriously and maturely deliberated on these considerations and being desirous as far as possible to cement and invigorate the federal union, that it may be both established on the most immutable basis and be the more effectual for securing the immediate object of it, do hereby agree to and recommend to the legislatures of every state to confirm and to authorize their delegates in Congress to subscribe the following clause as an additional article to the 13 Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union.
Okay, so I pulled up Article 13. Article 13 of the Articles of Confederation, this is what it says at the very beginning. Every state shall abide by the determination of the United States in Congress assembled on all questions by which this Confederation are submitted to them. And the articles of this confederation shall be inviolably observed by every state, and the union shall be perpetual, nor shall any alteration at any time hereafter be made in any of them unless such alteration be agreed to in a Congress of the United States and be afterwards confirmed by the legislatures of every state. So that's the 13th article. But clearly they're using the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As a title. This is a title. You know, and I don't know if you've ever heard somebody, you know, go when they're talking, they go out of their way, capital U, capital P, capital, you know, and then they little U, little P, and I'm going, wow, you know, the I'll just say the fact that so many people are so obsessed by, and I guess some of this is important, but what's important is the Constitution did not delegate to the federal government the ability to redefine things, to create new meaning of things. I mean, that would have to be delegated to them as an amendment to create this new meaning of citizens, to subjugate us. I mean, that would require an amendment to say that they now will basically treat the citizens of the United States, because if we don't delegate to them, then they're acting outside of the powers granted.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this crap started happening, I believe, during the bankruptcies of America. And I don't know how many times we've been bankrupt, but I know we've had real financial problems. And that's really more due to the fact that the European banking system has been constantly meddling in our affairs all the way up to the Federalist, or I should say the Federal Reserve. And I know we've at least had bankruptcy once, if not twice, since the Federal Reserve, because under FDR we went bankrupt. Now, whether that was constitutionally done, absolutely not. They were spending money on things that they had no authority to spend on. I mean, it's one thing for them to borrow money to basically prosecute a war. That's something they have the authority to borrow money for. But they do not have the authority to borrow money for them to build highways, for them to build water dams, and all of the, you know, putting a chicken in every pot. They didn't have the authority to do that.
Okay.
All right, so let's go back to it is understood.
It is understood and hereby declared that in case any one or more of the Confederated States shall refuse or neglect to abide by the determinations of the United States and Congress assembled, or to observe all the articles of the Confederation as required in the 13th article, the said United States and Congress assembled are fully authorized to employ the force of the United States as well by sea as by land to compel such state or states to fulfill their federal engagements, and particularly to make distraint on any of the effects, vessels, and merchandises of such state or states, or any of the citizens thereof, wherever found, and to prohibit and prevent their trade and intercourse, as well with any other of the United States and of the citizens thereof, as with any foreign state, and as well by land as by sea, until full compensation or compliance be obtained with respect to all requisitions made by the United States in Congress assembled in pursuance of the Articles of Confederation.
Okay, so do you get any idea that maybe they're not happy with the fact that the states aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now they realize that they're supposed to do these things, and then they say, shoot, we don't have the authority to demand it. What do we do? Oh, okay, so we have to amend the Constitution. And so we're now asking you to back up what you gave us the power to do. So please give us the power to do what we've been asked to do. It's kind of sad. But anyway, okay, so let's keep going.
And it is to be understood and is hereby agreed and conceded that this article shall be fully and absolutely binding and conclusive when all the states not actually in the possession of the enemy shall enact the same.
Okay, there you go. All right, so we've gotten two done, and now we can dive into the third. So this next one, let me see here. Attempted article, attempted, I wandered because I wanted to open up the articles. Okay, so now we've actually got, this is the third one. Now, this is technically after the ratification, but in the same year of the ratification. So this one right here, so actually, I stand corrected. It took 4 years to ratify. I thought it was 83, but actually it was 80. Was it 83? It was 83. So there were three hard amendments that actually were passed or were requested. Not one of these amendments passed, by the way, but it was 83 when the ratification of the Articles of Confederation was finally done. Okay, so anyway, the committee report on carrying the Confederate into effect and on additional powers needed by Congress. Now, look at what the powers they need now that they realize they didn't have the power to do. So go ahead.
The committee appointed to prepare an exposition of the Confederation, a plan for its complete execution and supplemental articles report, that they ought to be discharged from the exposition of the Confederation because such a comment would be voluminous if coextensive with the subject. The omission to enumerate any congressional powers become an argument against their existence, and it will be early enough to insist upon them when they shall be exercised and disputed. They further report that the Confederation requires execution in the following manner.
Okay.
Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah, keep going. Uh-huh.
Okay. By adjusting the mode and proportions of the militia aid to be furnished to a sister state laboring under invasion, by describing the privileges and immunities to which the citizens of one state are entitled in another, by setting forth the conditions upon which a criminal is to be
delivered up
by one state upon the demand of the executive of another, by declaring the method of exemplifying records and the operation of the acts and judicial proceedings of the courts of one state contravening those of the states in which they are asserted, by a form to be observed in the notification of the appointment or suspension of delegates, by an oath to be taken by every delegate against secret trusts or salaries, by specifying the privileges of delegates from arrests, imprisonment, questioning for free speech and debates in Congress, saving as well their answerability to their constituents, was protesting against the authority of individual legislatures to absolve them from obligations of secrecy, by instituting an oath to be taken by the officers of the U.S. or any of them against presents, emoluments, emolument office or title of any kind from a king, prince, or foreign state, mm-hmm. by one universal plan of equipping, training, and governing the militia, by a scheme for estimating the value of all land within each state granted to or surveyed for any person or persons together with the buildings and improvements thereon and the appointment of certain periods at which payment shall be made, by establishing rules for captures on land and the distribution of the sales, by asserting the jurisdiction of Congress in territorial questions, by erecting a mint, by fixing a standard of weights and measures throughout the U.S., by appointing a commie for Indian affairs, by regulating the post office, by establishing a census for which inhabitants in each state by establishing a census of white inhabitants in each state, mm-hmm. by publishing the Journal of Congress monthly, by registering seamen, by liquidation of old accounts against the U.S., and by providing means of animadverting on delinquent states.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a few mouthfuls there. So apparently, these things weren't thought of, that obviously they had kind of propped up or snuck up already. And this was in 1781. So go ahead, let's wrap this up so we can kind of look at this. Go ahead.
Resolving that of the preceding articles, the ninth be referred to the
Board of War.
Board of War. Okay. To the Board of War, the 13th, 14th, and 16th. 16th to the
Support
of Finance and the others to Economy in
committee.
Order
that's
the,
a committee.
Committee, okay.
They're using shorthand, okay.
And the others to a committee in order that the subject matter thereof may be extended in detail for the consideration of Congress. And your committee further report that as America became a Confederate Republic to crush the present and future foes of the, of her independence, as of this republic, a general council is a necessary organ, and without the extension of its power in the cases herein after enumerated war may receive a fatal inclination and peace to be exposed to daily convulsions, it be resold to recommend to the several states to authorize, I don't know what that abbreviation is, to authorize U.S. in Congress assembled to lay embargoes in time of war without any limitation, to prescribe rules for impressing property into the service of the U.S. during the present war, to appoint the collectors of and direct the mode of accounting for taxes imposed according to the requisitions of Congress, to recognize the independence of and admit into the Federal Union any party, any part of one or more of the U.S. with the consent of the dismembered states, to stipulate in treaties with foreign nations for the establishment of
consular
power with reference to the state individually, to distrain the property of the state delinquent in its assigned proportion of men and money, to vary the rules of suffrage in Congress, taking care that in questions for waging war, granting letters of marque and reprisal in time of peace, concluding or giving instruction for any alliance, coining money, regulating the value of coin, determining the total number of land and sea forces, and allotting to each state its quota of men or money, admitting bills of credit, borrowing money, fixing the number and force of vessels of war, and appointing a commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy, at least 2/3 of the U.S. shall agree therein. Resolved that a committee be appointed to prepare a representation to the several states of the necessity of these supplemental powers and of pursuing in the modification thereof one uniform plan.
Okay, so apparently they missed a few things in creating this government. And so, I mean, it kind of goes down to all of these things you see actually show up in the Constitution, right? The coining of money. Mm-hmm. We literally see that the things that were not available to the government at hand, they all of a sudden were then ingrained or included in the Constitution. So, you know, like the oath of office and those types of things, and to be able to kind of root out secrecy. Okay, so I think this is all great. So the Fourth Amendment, now we're actually a couple years later, and the amendment to the federal, or amendment to share expenses according to population, that is 18 April 1783. And so this is a short one as well. These are, you know, all less than a page, but they're obviously finding problems. Go ahead. Are you ready for this one, number four?
Yes.
Okay, great.
That as a more convenient and certain rule of ascertaining the proportions to be supplied by the states respectively to the common treasury, the following alteration in the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union between these states be, and the same is hereby agreed to in Congress, and the several states are advised to authorize their respective delegates to subscribe and ratify the same as part of the said instrument of union, in the words following, to wit. So much of the eighth of the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union between the 13 states of America, as is contained in the words following, to wit. All charges of war and all their expenses shall be incurred for the common defense or general welfare, and allowing and allowed by the United States in Congress assembled shall be defrayed out of a common treasury, which shall be supplied by the several states in proportion to the value of all land within each state granted to or surveyed for any person, as such land and the buildings and improvements thereon shall be estimated according to such mode as the United States and Congress assembled shall from time to time direct and appoint, is hereby revoked and made void. And in place thereof it is declared and concluded, the same having been agreed to in a Congress of the United States, that all charges of war and all other expenses that have been or shall be incurred for the common defense or general welfare and allowed by the United States and Congress assembled, except so far as shall be otherwise provided for, shall be defrayed out of a common treasury, which shall be supplied by the several states in proportion to the whole number of white and other free citizens and inhabitants of every age, sex, and condition, including those bound to servitude for a term of years, and 3/5 of all other persons not comprehended in the foregoing description, except Indians not paying taxes in each state, which number shall be triennially taken and transmitted to the United States in Congress assembled in such mode as they shall direct and appoint.
Yeah, so I think every third of a year or something like that, breaking something into threes. So as we look at this right here, they're literally asking the ability to basically go after population. So when we look at how they're do you not see how they're surveying land for estimating the value thereof for taxation? So property tax was actually considered as a vehicle or a mechanism for the federal government to basically say, you know, your state's value is this much out of, you know, the value of the dollar, because they've created the value of the dollar. And between one state and the other state, here's the interesting thing, that property, the value of property in, let's say, Arkansas compared to New York was dramatically different. But the taxes would be applied equally. In other words, it would be, you know, 3 cents to every acre or however. And actually, I think they ended up making the rule in the determination of apportionment that they went by head, not by property or acre or what have you. And I think that was due to the fact that they realized with new states coming into the union, these new states would not have enough people to support the payment of all the land of the state. Does that make sense? In other words, if they're taxing all the land by acreage, or they're taxing the states by acreage, then the burden would be equal. But if they tax by head, then it would be based upon how many people in a less populated state. They wouldn't be paying the same amount, but they're taxed at the same rate. So that there was a uniformity. They had to maintain this uniformity, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So there was another thing that I noticed. They also used in the Articles of Confederation, this was brought up by Madison, that the term common defense and general welfare, the common defense and welfare, that clause existed in the Articles of Confederation. And there was no construing that was determined to actually pay bounties, to help pay for welfare of individuals or bailing out companies and or corporations. It was a general term that was basically affixed to very specific objects of how these things would contribute to the general welfare of the states, i.e. coining money, Well, now the states will have money coined for their general welfare so that they have a stable currency, not the fact that they have this responsibility of providing for the welfare of the individuals and the states and the corporate. No. I mean, this whole, the way everything started getting redefined, and, you know, it's an evil person that wants to redefine and take what we'd call artistic license and saying, oh, well, you know, it seems like, you know, you're a citizen of the government, so we can do anything to you that we want to do. Like you're a subject of the government instead of a citizen of the government. People are being taught communistic principles. They're being taught these ideas that they are actually in sync with the paradigm that was cast a long time ago. In other words, that paradigm that we talked about earlier, how people would be looking at the citizens of the United States as subjects to the government. Folks, that was never the case. We were never to be subjects. We were a self-governing system, that we were the sovereigns, and we were in a representative government, the essence of our government. That the governments that we created were equal essences within that government, which is why we have bicameral legislative bodies that represents the sovereignty of the people and the sovereignty of the government that the people created. These principles have been lost. These principles have been, you know, they've played around with these fundamental interpretations or the layouts, the definitions of what these things mean in the Constitution, so that the communists today can run with this general welfare thing. So the communists today can actually start providing services that are not enumerated. And the whole concept of enumerations, what is enumerated in the Constitution? What are the roles, responsibilities, powers, property, criminal jurisdiction, standards, so forth and so on? These things that are laid out in the Constitution are fixed. The only thing that they can make law on are those very few things that are within Article 1, Section 8. That's it. They cannot make a law to, you know, change what the apportionment, or I should say the representation, the persons of representation to a representative, i.e. today we have one person represented by, or I should say, 750,000 people represented by one representative, one person. That is not a power granted to them. It was fixed. We were to have 30,000 people to one representative. So when people start understanding this, when people realize how far we've wandered, the sooner you get there, folks, the better off we will be. We're really out of time. Thank you so much, Tammy, for your patience and the struggling with the abbreviations. I think the YE was like year ending. I don't know. But anyway, I couldn't think of a good one either. Folks, as you can see, going through all of these things kind of helps literally start placing context to some of the misinformation we're getting, such as what was the United States they were referring to. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.